3.
Hey, everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, back for the Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Zoom call number 50. That's 50. We have been doing this for more than a year, and it is hotter than ever. This is an escalating issue, even though the election that prompted us to get on is over. We are now in the prospect of a life and death struggle to defend democracy in America in ways that we never imagined would be necessary, but here we are. We are also on the radio at Progressive Radio Network, my usual slot at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, which runs at 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday. This first hour will be recorded and will be put on the Progressive Radio Network. It also goes on a number of stations on the Pacifica Network and elsewhere. We are really glad to have everybody with us. We have 75 folks on the Zoom right now, most of whom I can see on my magic screen here. We have a very, very powerful setup today, really important stuff. I'm going to give Lulu Freestad, the great Lulu, a minute or two. She's got a there's a major hearing coming up in New York State about election processes. We're then going to go to Charlie Cray, my Greenpeace buddy, and talk about a report that the Greenpeace has just released on the corporations and voting rights. And then we're going to turn it over to Joel Siegel, who's going to talk to Charles Moreland and others about DC statehood. I'm getting an echo here. At any rate, we are rocking and rolling. Lisa Matras, good to see you. There's so many great friends here and people who are really deep in the weeds. In the second part of the show, of the talk or show, however you want to call it, starting at 6 o'clock Eastern time, 48 minutes from now, we are going to devote the rest of the talk to Arizona. We were with John Brakey and Ray Lutz, who are right in the belly of the beast there, having labored in the fields of election protection all these years, and I mean years, more than a decade. John and Ray are right in the middle, right in the heart of everything that's going on in Arizona. So that will start at 6 o'clock Eastern time. In the meantime, we're gonna go deep into DC statehood. We're also gonna talk about gerrymandering that Joel Siegel is gonna run. I wanna thank Mike Hirsch and Steve Caruso, our erstwhile engineers, for running this call, Joel Siegel for co-convening with me, and let's just jump right into it. So Lulu Freestad, let me give you a couple minutes here. There's a hearing in New York State tomorrow, I believe, and you are desperate to get people to call in. So can you explain exactly what's going on?
Thank you so much, Harvey. Thank you for all the good work you're doing. So in New York State, Smart Elections, which is a group that I'm the executive director of, has been working with a coalition of grassroots groups and even some national groups to try to get a really important bill passed here in New York. It would be a first of its kind bill, and it would ban what's called hybrid voting machines. I've been on here many times speaking about them. They're voting machines that have the capability to add votes to paper ballots after you review your ballot. And security experts have said that they're a disaster, that they're bad, and that they pose extraordinary risks to voters. If we could get this bill passed in New York, it would be a first of a kind. It would be a huge, huge win. And we could also possibly set the precedent to get it into S1, which is federal legislation. So this is really, really important, and a lot's at stake. We've got a lot of support here. We've got 54 senators and state assembly people who are co-sponsoring the bill, but we can't get it through the committees. And so the election committee for New York State was posted, the election committee agenda was posted today, and we're not on it. And we're just livid, actually. So we've been calling all afternoon, we've been flooding the Senator Myrie's office, who is the chair of the elections committee in New York, with calls. And I'm gonna put that number into the chat right now. And literally this is gonna take you 2 minutes. You could go on mute during this call and do it if you want and just get it out of the way. It's so simple. All you need to do is just call and say that you support the hybrid ban bill. It's S309, and I'm putting it into the chat. What you're gonna say, all you're gonna say is that you want the bill on the agenda. That's it. We're asking to put the bill on the agenda and pass it through the Elections Committee. And if you could do that tonight, 2 minutes, we would be so grateful. And then there's the sheet where you go and you say, I called. And that takes you another 30 seconds. And this is, and I'm going to put that in the chat also. So this is where you say, I called. Thank you so much, Harvey. I really, really appreciate everything you're doing. And I'm going to come.
Lou, you're great. You're one of the true great stalwarts of this election protection movement. Ruth Strauss wanted to ask you something, Ruth. Ruth Strauss?
Yeah, Lulu, I'm sure that you realize this, but it's okay for us to call from out of state because it will turn out to be a national issue, correct?
That is correct. And we have people nationally who have been calling. And all you have to say is, this really concerns me. And I want New York to be a leader on this because I'm worried about this issue in my state. And I want New York to lead the way. Please get the bill on the agenda.
Great. Lulu, thank you so much. And anybody who isn't familiar with Lulu's work, she's tremendously credible. Whatever she says, it goes. And please do. I'll try and jump in and everybody else jump in with what she asks. Does anyone else have a question for her? That was an excellent question, Ruth. Jed Pauker.
Yeah, thanks. Real quick, Lulu, what's the deadline for this call?
If you could call tonight, it would be so helpful. The meeting is tomorrow at 1 p.m. So literally it will take you 2 minutes. And I'm also going to put some quotes into the chat, things that security experts have said to help you know what to say. Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
I got a question for Lulu.
Okay, we're going to move. Anybody else have something that we want to move on?
Yeah, I got it. It's Howie. I got a question. You said that they published the bills coming out of the election committee. Where can you see that?
This is for New York, Howie, and you're in New York. I'll post the agenda for tomorrow's meeting in the chat. There's some interesting bills on there, just not the one. There's also a bill to make digital ballot images public records in New York, something we've all been fighting for. That is on the agenda, and that's actually excellent. I'll put the whole agenda into the chat.
Thanks.
Great question. Great work. Thank you, Lulu. Everybody check the chat for that, especially people in New York State. If you can deal with it, that would be great. But as Ruth points out, it's a national issue and definitely deserves our attention. Okay, move on now. Charlie Cray. Charlie, are you with us?
I am, Harvey.
Okay, Charlie Cray, you're in DC. You're my former co-conspirator. Well, I'm still a Greenpeacer and you're still a voting member. So we're currently Greenpeace co-conspirators along with Kenny and Dave Rapp. You are issuing a report today. Tell us about this report if you can, and you got the details, Dollars versus Democracy. And you're in DC, so I'm going to connect you up with Charles Moreland and Joel Siegel. But tell us what's going on with this report.
Okay, thanks, Harvey. We released this report today. It's the result of some research into the state legislators who are sponsoring both anti-voter bills, a select number of the key ones of those, and anti-protest bills. So two of the largest attacks on democracy going on across the country right now, both very racist attacks on communities of color, et cetera. I don't want to go into too much in the report. People can see it and download it off that page. We have lots of spreadsheets that are linked in there that give you links to the companies that gave the most to the bill sponsors in particular states. So if people need that for a particular state, that's linked into the spreadsheets as well, particularly for the anti-protest bills. So what we're doing is calling on companies to stop, obviously, giving campaign contributions to legislators who sponsor these types of bills and vote for them. But our top recommendation is that companies recognize that, you know, with a lot of these bills already passed, playing whack-a-mole one by one, there are a lot of groups on the ground, led in Georgia and others, already putting pressure on companies to oppose these bills. But we need national standards as set out in the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and especially the For the People Act. So our primary focus is going to be on pushing companies to publicly endorse the For the People Act. There is actually a web page that has been launched today by our allies at vote.org, When We All Vote, and the DFAD Coalition. I put the link in the chat. That's for the People Act support. We want to drive companies towards that website to get them to pledge to support the For the People Act. And if you look in the report, you'll see that we also call out the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They are the biggest lobbying force on the Hill, apart from the Republican Party right now, in opposition to the For the People Act. They have some pretty specious arguments against the bill that we address in the report. And there are many member companies of the chamber that have already endorsed statements like the Black Economic Alliance statement in defense of democracy, the Civic Alliance statement. There are six members of the U.S. Chamber's board of directors, which sets policymaking direction for the chamber, who have signed these statements already. And then there's another dozen very large companies that are members of the chamber who signed those statements as well. We name them in the report. We call on them to tell the U.S. Chamber to stand down or quit the chamber. We've seen this in the past with respect to the chamber's position on climate change. Nike and other companies quit the chamber over their position on climate change. And we think that a lot of these companies need to live up to their commitment to racial justice as well as voting rights by taking a stand on this bill, as well as their position within the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. So that's where we're going. We just launched the report today. And if anybody has any questions, feel free to reach out to me directly afterwards or with whatever time we have in this.
Okay, Charlie, you put that in the chat. It sounds really powerful, really important stuff. Anybody can go and look at the report. Is this a Greenpeace report?
This is a Greenpeace report.
Okay, Lynn Feinerman has a hand. Lynn Feinerman?
Yes, hi, thank you. Had to unmute myself. I just wanted to, it may be a little off the subject, but I just wanted to say that there is a committee meeting, a key committee meeting tomorrow on HRS1. And they're starting to meet to try and negotiate. And I called Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and Mark Kelly to urge them to get on board with the Democrats and not try to put any obstacles. I would like to know if Charlie Cray has other people specifically we should call to pressure them to get on board with S1.
Well, I think everybody can call their own senators, especially the Rules Committee is marking up the bill tomorrow. There'll be tons of attempts to introduce amendments to slow the whole thing down, but it'll eventually pass through the committee. And then the question is the timing for it being brought to the floor for a vote. It has to, we really believe that it has to pass before the August recess, or it's going to be too late to address some of these anti-voter laws that are being passed across the country.
Wow, incredibly important stuff. Thank you, Charlie. Everybody take a look at that report. And Charlie, one of the ulterior motives I had for bringing you on, is always glad to have you, is to put you in touch with Charles Moreland. Charles Moreland is one of the great leaders of the DC statehood movement. Let me turn it over to Joel Siegel. You are in DC, Charlie, and you should meet Charles Moreland. And Joel, do you want to introduce Charles in our talk here now about DC statehood?
Yeah, I want to, before I get to my brother Charles, I want to thank Charlie. Such a brilliant and simple idea. That's what makes sure I understand what you're saying is you want to get as many businesses from the Chamber of Commerce to be in support of HR 1 and HR 4?
Yes, they need to take a stand publicly for themselves and then speak within the chamber and get it to stand down.
Well, no, I haven't heard anyone else come up with that. I was going to say if there could be some kind of a press conference, because we need to get the green organizations and the anti-poverty groups, all the groups who have a stake in civil rights and being able to vote, And this is incredibly exciting what you're doing, but I think that we need to have an offline conversation about how we can use our networks to get more pressure on the businesses to come out, because they're not. And you're doing something which is a miracle. So I just want to thank you for what you're doing.
Joel, put your contacts in the chat for Charlie and Charles Moreland as well, and you guys should be in touch.
Yeah, because no one else has come up with this idea, Charlie, about businesses. And while we're at it, why not get artists and dignitaries and celebrities and former, that's how we used to do it back in the day, you know? You just get as many groups as you can. So yeah, we'll definitely do that. But hey, Charles, good to see you. What Charles, I was hoping you could talk about is what's the status of, you know, the bills in Congress, and then your strategy to put moral pressure on, you know, on the Senate to do more than block the bill because of a member of the Senate or two. But what's your overall vision and strategy, and then how can we help you?
Charles, you're on mute. Yeah, good evening, everybody. Thanks so much, Harvey and Joel and the Progressive Democrats of America. Charlie, I look forward to meeting with you. I'd certainly like to entertain genius ideas. One of the things we're going to talk about today is a genius idea that Harvey and Joel introduced to us last week. We are the Douglas Commonwealth Coalition. We are current and former members of DC's elected statehood delegation and those who support our cause. The genius idea that Harvey and Joel brought today was, I mean, last week to us, I want to announce is that we're going to, in collaboration with you all, have a big march on August the 28th, which is the anniversary of the historic March on Washington. Brilliant, Harvey.
Well, thank you.
I took it to, and it just happened that the members of our coalition were also thinking about how we can stage a demonstration, and it reminds me of the situation that happened in 1963. So for anybody who is wondering how in the world can we have a mass demonstration, organize a mass demonstration between now and August. Well, the situation is very similar to what happened in 1963, when in the wake of violent attacks on civil rights demonstrators in Birmingham, Alabama, there was momentum for a mass protest. It just happened that A. Philip Randolph had planned a march for jobs. So here we have today, Al Sharpton, already has August 28th booked. And so it's very, very convenient and an opportunity for us to team up with Al Sharpton, either on the 28th or the 29th, or both. And so historically, A. Philip Randolph and Martin Luther King decided to plan one march. So we're in a similar situation today. It's advantageous to us. So all those who are filled with fear, doubt, and disbelief, they started organizing in May of 63. They spoke to the president in June, and really from between June and August, they organized it. And they did not have the internet. They did not have social media. So we can do this only with the help of the Progressive Democrats of America. So in the interest of adhering to the four B's, be bright, be brief, and be gone, I'm going to turn it over to our senator. Senator Brown, you have the mic.
Senator Brown, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thanks so much, Charles. I'll try to be brief. First, let me just tell you what's going on in the Senate in case you know, you're not up to date. Basically, we got a big blow to our movement last week, unfortunately, when Senator Manchin stood up and said that he would not support DC statehood. This is important because as we went into the Senate, one narrow path of victory could have been a suspension of the rule, the filibuster, and 51 votes, Democratic votes, to pass the legislation. We're not going to get 10 senators at this point. We've only had one senator after four bills that have been put in both the House and the Senate. There's only been one Republican who's ever supported DC statehood. So that's a very steep climb for us. Senator Manchin knew that, and he went public with his denouncing DC statehood, or saying that he wasn't for DC statehood, which really let some air out of the balloon. So we're trying to recover from that. But the good news is, if you don't know, the White House has issued a statement in support of DC statehood. There's pressure being put on Homeland Security and Government Affairs to have a hearing. 100 groups stepped up to the plate and demanded a hearing on the statehood bill that's now in the Senate, S-51. So we're moving along, but of course it's a high hurdle for us, or a steep mountain. And as Charles points out, this is a great idea that Joel's had, and the other people have had, to have this event on the Mall, because that's exactly what we need. I'm encouraged to be on a Zoom with former members of Greenpeace, because that's the kind of activism we need now in our movement. You know, we've been too damn polite for the past 220 years. So in that regard, I think the best news of the week is that my house is the first house in the District of Columbia, and I put up a billboard size sign in my front yard with a disclaimer that says, "Warning, you are entering the District of Columbia, the nation's capital. Caution, residency may result in the loss of your basic civil rights. Be advised that revocation of your rights does not relieve your responsibility for obligations to the state for which you may be liable. Taxation without representation." That sign got coverage on ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, locally, and it's been in several publications. And in 1 week, it's been viewed by more than 25,000 people on the internet. I was involved in a chat room over the weekend. We were on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the number one post on a nationwide chat room. And I mean, it was all day. We had people. Great. So that's the good news, is there's a lot of pent up, I don't know if you want to call it hostility or anxiety about DC statehood. And people are coming forth to express their opinions and their support. And the support has been overwhelming. There has been almost no negative things said about this this effort. And it amazed me that even the neighbors aren't annoyed. You know, you put a billboard up in your front yard, sometimes the neighbors get upset. But every remark we've gotten has been positive. So there's a lot of positive potential out there. And if we can capture that, and really get this movement going, rather than going up to Capitol Hill like we're out of a Dickens novel and, you know, saying, "Oh, sir, please, you know, but we need our rights." We need to stand up and make the demand that Frederick Douglass said that you need to make, because power can seize nothing without it. So the good news is, I think we can do this.
Wonderful. Fantastic. You should be in touch with Charlie Cray. He does have Greenpeace has a sign making facility in the area there. If you want to proliferate these signs around, that would be great. I think we should just sail the Rainbow Warrior up to Potomac there and do an occupation. You know, what can I tell you?
But I'll be the maidenhead. You can,
yeah, you know. But I got to tell you, the idea for this came when I was teaching history in college. I showed every class that I taught the "I Have a Dream" speech. I've seen it at least 100 times. So that thing is dug into my head, and we're talking about August 28th and 9th, which are on a Saturday and a Sunday, which is magnificent. It's the 58th anniversary of the "I Have a Dream" speech, and it seems perfectly the perfect moment to rally for democracy. By then, hopefully, the COVID will be more under control. We have it be a vaccination center as well. The four issues we discussed are DC statehood, voter protection, ending poverty and homelessness, and a green powered earth. And we from the environmental movement would like to demand that all, I don't speak for it entirely, but as a member, that we demand all the federal buildings in DC be solarized, starting with the White House. Charlie and I did an inspection by Zoom of the White House roof. It is perfectly suited for solar panels. There was one up there for solar water heating, which Jimmy Carter had and then Ronald Reagan took down, but there's no reason not to cover the roof of the White House with solar panels. So those are the four basic issues, Charles, we discussed, and we're gonna move ahead with them. And it could be a great, great, great moment. Of course, it'll be Zoomed as well as live, but if we can get the Lincoln Memorial and do that for 2 days, that would be a game changer, okay? No matter how many people show up. Okay, Ruth Strauss and then Jed Pauker wants to ask something of Charles or the senator.
Yeah, Michael, this may sound nuts, but that's okay with me. Has anybody thought about a tax boycott? Everybody talks about taxation without representation. They can't jail 700,000 of you.
Michael, you're muted.
Absolutely, absolutely, we have. Well, Harvey, we have two more people that we want to present today.
Yeah, oh, please.
Because, you know, what you said is absolutely correct. And one of the things with our presentation today, we want to show how all of these issues intersect.
Right.
Okay, so I'm going to have a brief report from Dr. Don Jones, just to let us know, brief status report on how quickly we have moved and where we are with planning the demonstration. Is that all right, Harvey?
Charles,
excuse me, can I just answer the question quickly? One of the problems with that, Ruth, with tax resistance, is that most of us don't actually pay taxes. They're withdrawn from our salaries. So it's hard to resist paying your taxes when your employer is actually the person that takes
it. Okay, thanks.
But it's a great idea.
Let me say this. Well, Michael, you know that we led a tax resistance movement in the 90s.
Right.
First of all, myself and a group of tax resistors in Washington, D.C., we sued the IRS to return $2 billion in taxes that they had taken from D.C. Of course, the court ruled, as it always does, that that is a political issue, and they would not look at it. We also used to, with Jesse Jackson, myself, and Mayor Kelly at the time, we were bold enough to stage tea parties at the IRS. We would barge into the IRS and dump tea on the floor of the IRS. In fact, IRS agents from DC would tell me, Mr. Moreland, Representative Moreland, what you're doing is the right thing. We support you. The first George Bush, in fact, promised to arrest me for staging these resistance efforts. So we've tried everything that we can, but as Michael said, it's very, very, very difficult. But we do want to address that. One thing we're thinking about right now that we're going to talk to Charlie about, how do we resist taxation without representation? One of the things that we're going to propose is a no taxation without representation procurement bill. which we're going to ask our DC council to agree not to buy, purchase any services or goods from any organizations or individuals that support taxation without representation. And of course, that can be passed on and done also in various state legislatures and municipalities. So we will address that issue.
Cool. Now you wanted someone else to talk?
Yes, Dr. Don Jones.
Don, take
it. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Is there a moment for comment?
Let's get Dr. Jones in and then we can comment, please. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, what we're doing now, I've reached out to the DC Park Service. Because the march in Washington is the 28th and they're gonna break down on the 29th, we will attempt to team up with them and use the same facilities on the 29th, which will allow us to save money. If we cannot, then we've got the Washington Monument and the National Mall, which is all attached to one another. It's a straight shot and they're only separated, bounded by the streets. So one way or the other, we will get it together. We're starting the planning process. We'll be looking at what we're going to need in terms of the budget, and that'll determine whether or not we can connect with National Action Network or we have to do this thing on our own. And preferably, we should be able to connect with them, because I think the two situations, the March on Washington and DC statehood, are both linked. And I'm going to be quiet.
That's great. That's great to know. That's really good. And then if someone had a question for you real quick. We have 92 people on the call with us, so we're rolling here. Jed, I think, and then Charles, did you have anyone else that you wanted to have present?
Yes, Attorney Theodora Brown.
Oh, Theodora, yes, please.
She's going to talk about the progress we've made with Andrea. As you know, we all spoke to Andrea last week, and so we all had a meeting. So, Theodora?
Please. Hi, hello everybody. My comments are very brief as well. And so what we great conversation with Andrea. Thank you for giving us this platform here. And what we're going to do is work with Andrea to stand up a Democracy Center in DC, focused exclusively on statehood. And so there is some organizational administrative things that have to happen in order for us to make that happen. And I'm going to be the person pushing that on behalf of the Douglas Commonwealth Coalition. So just know that that's in process, and we are rapidly and quickly I'm standing up the organization and the apparatus for us to be able to do all of the things that we have planned to do.
Yes, and we Dave Rapp is on the phone, who works with Ben and Jerry. We had talked about combining a Democracy Center with an ice cream store. I don't know how that will go, but that'd be a lot of fun, wouldn't it?
We can talk to him about it. It may make sense, because one of the things we talked about was, we have all these food insecurity issues right now, and to be able to lure people in and get them to focus on lack of statehood in DC is to say, hey, we have some food to give away. So we have ice cream cones to give away. I'm sure that would go over well with people. So absolutely want to be able to have that conversation with him so that we can figure out how that works.
Yeah, so we have to make sure we have plenty of chocolate there. Charles, did you just want to say something about that?
I just said it sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's a great idea. And then we could offer cruises on the Rainbow Warrior. We'd be in great shape all around, Jed Palker, you want to jump in here?
And yeah, thanks. A question for Senator Brown. We have Indivisible and the Common Cause groups calling West Virginia, Arizona, and now Maine as well, supporting HR1, S1, S51, and HR4, of course, and ending the filibuster. What do you know about what Manchin said last week that might help us refine our messaging when we call West Virginia?
Charles, Senator Brown, you got it on mute.
Sorry, it's
there you go.
Tough dealing with old people. That's a great question. And the only thing we really know is what he said in an interview, which was that he was against DC statehood. He believed that a constitutional amendment was required for the District of Columbia to get full citizenship, which of course is a red herring. The Constitution doesn't say anything about DC statehood. And then he followed it up by saying he wasn't interested in either removing the filibuster or making any modification to it, which again speaks directly to DC statehood.
Unbelievable. Before I proceed, Jed, I need to know who that is on your t-shirt.
This guy?
Oh, there you go.
Yes.
Is the text to 50409, text HR4 50409, and resistment will take care of the rest for you.
Okay, thank you very much. For you in radio land, tell us who that is, Jed Bowker.
John Lewis?
Yes, John Lewis. My radio listeners can't see your t-shirt.
The t-shirt has a picture of John Lewis, whom I hope we all know well at this point in time. Sunday, we had a fantastic 125 or 150 votercades all over the United States in his honor. It was all about voting rights. And I still haven't got to the media about it yet. Thank you.
Justin LeBlanc.
Harvey, speaking of radio,
yeah,
Senator Brown, you have an announcement to make about your radio program.
Well, you know, I have a radio show that's on every week on the BBS radio network. It's been on for 8 years now. We get about 1 million hits a year. We've had governors and members of Congress and several presidential candidates on the show. And we'd like to have Joel and Harvey on our show this week to talk about the work that you're doing. I have a co-host on the West Coast, a socially liberal Republican named Maria Sanchez, and we'd love to invite both of you guys to be on the show if you're available. We really not available this Sunday, sometime.
Well, put the call letters and the connections in the chat so everybody can hear it. Justin LeBlanc, did you want to jump in, Justin?
Yes. So all these wonderful things that we've got going on, Georgia Miracle, Washington, D.C. statehood, voting rights bills, going through, working on overcoming filibusters. I see we've got a great ground game going, but I think we need a dual pronged strategy, right? You can get votes, you can get out the vote. But then how do you get through committee? How do you?
Well, did someone want to jump in on that? Joel Siegel, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say one thing is that we need a more coordinated ground game. And in order to do that, we have to raise money, but this particular call is not for that purpose. We have like a very, very part-time operation here, but we're highly effective. There needs to be some kind of a steering committee of the different groups working on these different issues, because having worked in Congress most of my career, the way we took someone seriously, if it was a issue, was A, how many calls do we get? How many emails do we get? How many office visits do we get? And if there was a letter sent to the office and you showed all these different groups working together, then you had to take it, the project, seriously. And I would say the difference between, let's say I'm 61, I came from the 60s civil rights movements and same freeze and universal health care. There was more, there's more fragmentation based on getting a 501c3 grant from a foundation now than there was before. So that, I just want to throw that out there, not to criticize, but to point out that we're going to have to up our game in terms of power dynamics.
I agree.
That's that question. Yeah. That is the pertinent question. That is the question of the day. How do we? And let me start off by responding to what Senator Brown said earlier, that we have begged and pleaded in as humble a fashion as any disenfranchised people, in terms of the District of Columbia, as any political slave ever pleaded for our freedom. There's no way, there's no chance that the United States Senate is suddenly gonna decide to just give us our rights. We're talking about control of the most important piece of real estate on the planet. And so what we propose to do is just what Maynard and Dr. King did in 1963 when the Civil Rights Bill was on the table. We plan to organize and demonstrate, engage in nonviolent civil disobedience to force the Congress to do what is right. It would be one thing if we were asking them to do a favor, but we're asking them to do what is right, the right thing to do. So we're gonna plan this demonstration, and we're gonna look at and examine other made ways and methods of civil disobedience to demand our rights to stand up. No one can ride your back unless it's bent. And so we're gonna stand up, all of us, for all these progressive, because there's a confluence of issues that all amount to the same issue, and that is justice, equality, and voting rights.
Man, fantastic. There is an issue we want to add in. We're up to 99 people here. We've been joined by John Brakey and Ray Lutz from Arizona. They're going to take over around the top of the hour, maybe a little after, to give us the lowdown from Arizona, which has suddenly become ground zero in all this. Joel Siegel and then Jeffrey, you want to talk quickly also about gerrymandering. I want to welcome James Fukuda to the call. Dennis Bernstein, great to see you guys. Anna Georgie from Western Mass, it's wonderful to have you on with us. And we are just really banging it away here. So Joel, you wanted to introduce a discussion of gerrymandering, which is a huge piece of this, please.
Yeah, I'll be real brief. I mean, gerrymandering has been accepted for all these years as something that was okay, because if the Republicans got in, they were gerrymandering the congressional districts. Then if the Democrats would get in, then they would do it. But it has to end, because it's, first of all, it's the ultimate form of voter suppression, where you're moved to a particular congressional district based on not on democracy, but based on how you're going to win. And it's the reason why if the Republicans take back the House, I know we're supposed to be nonpartisan, but this particular party is very lethal. If they take back the House, a lot of times it's because of gerrymandering. And I think that if with H.R. 1, if they do take out the gerrymandering part of the bill, and I think that's the biggest holdup, I hope that they're not going to take it. I think they will. Then I think there's going to be a need for a standalone bill, a federal bill that can either be passed either through an amendment, through an executive order, where they establish these nonpartisan civil society commissions to draw permanent lines. And that's, we're lucky to have great connections to the Judiciary Committee. And I just want to see what people thought about this idea. I don't want to do it now, because we need to wait and find out if it's going to be stripped from H.R. 1. I'm afraid that if it is taken out of H.R. 1, they may just forget about it. And that's how Congress usually works. Mike Hirsch will tell you this. They do a bill, it's all excited, everyone's all excited. Then the bill gets watered down and they don't revisit it again.
Jeffrey Barktill, you wanted to add to that real quick about gerrymandering? Thank you, Joel. Thank you for that. Jeffrey, and then I'll take hands on that. We have about five more minutes before we want to get into Arizona. Jeffrey, did you have a comment you wanted to make? Okay, does anyone else want to comment on Joel, what you're talking about is doing a separate issue, separate bill on gerrymandering? And are you gonna write it up? Yes, you will. Okay, I don't know why you're muted, but there you are. Okay, does anyone else have anything to add on gerrymandering?
I'm gonna draft it.
Okay, George Ripley, Jeffrey Barktill, we're waiting for you. You said you wanted to make a comment, George. George Ripley, you're on. We're at 100 people, by the way. I don't know where they're all coming from, but there they are. George Ripley, you got to unmute.
Yeah.
There. Okay.
A couple of years ago, I happened to attend a conference at Duke University put on by the League of Women Voters on gerrymandering. And what they were focused on was very interesting. It had to do with how easy it is to make the maps now. You just put in your parameters. If it's an algorithm, it'd be like setting up the parameters of your algorithm. But you can produce a map based on race. You can put it based on geography. You can put it based on whatever parameters you might have. And there are numerous ones that anybody could list. But then it's just a push of the button and the map is delivered. You can determine that. Now, this is relevant in everything that we do. Is it's not what you do, but how you do it. What's the intent of the people, the committee that is setting up the gerrymander, or the redistricting? What is their intent? And that's where we could get into really helping the process, is helping them determine what the intent of the gerrymander is.
Yeah, absolutely. And it used to be the feds could jump in on this. That's one of the reasons we need HR4. And you know, there's a discussion of HR4 to allow. Well, Joel, do you want to talk about that dimension of gerrymandering? And Charles Moreland, I mean, the DC statehood, the lack of DC statehood in a certain sense is a form of gerrymandering as well. You just black out people's right to vote. But Joel, do you want to comment on that?
The ultimate gerrymandering.
It is. It's the ultimate gerrymandering. And by the way, I know a guy named Gerrymander, and he actually is a brilliant, brilliant writer. I'm going to invite him on our next call. He's a really good guy. He lives in Northern California. Joel Siegel, did you want to comment further on that?
Well, first of all, under the Constitution, the Congress has the final say on voting. Okay, it's in the Constitution. States are granted powers, but they don't supersede the federal government. Federal government can do this. Number two, if the gerrymandering is based almost strictly on race, how can you possibly allow, you know, voting apartheid to continue when the lines are drawn based on race? And, or if you're a student and there comes a time, you know, I'm going to invoke Charles here, where, you know, you just have to say, okay, just as the Confederate monuments needed to be taken down because they're vestiges of Jim Crow and slavery, so should gerrymandering and the Electoral College. They're vestiges of a racist America that we have to end this. If we don't do it, we're not being true progressives and we're not defending our democracy. I mean, I don't know how much more obvious it needs to be. Gerrymandering is based on race. They have these machines now that are so sophisticated, they can do these computer mapping. They touch a button. Karl Rove, actually, I think, helped invent this. So they are very, very precise with their gerrymandering lines. Okay, that's what they have. Then where's our movement to reform the system? It's an HR1, but it's going to be taken out, I think. So anyway, that's pretty much. It's just the legacy of Jim Crow and slavery and racism, and it's evil. I think it's evil.
Yes, well said, well said, Joel. There's another issue too that's somewhat under the radar. It's the census. Because
we lost you. You're muted, Charles.
Okay, yeah, there's also the issue of the census, the way our former president, last impeached president, I won't call his name, the way he conducted the census. He suppressed the census count. And the result is that there are so many northern states that are actually losing representatives. They've been shifted towards the South. Then the president has the authority to challenge the results of that census. And I think we ought to go all out with that as another way.
The president has the authority to challenge.
Exactly.
And that's the first I've heard that. That's very interesting.
Yes, yes.
Definitely pursue that. Definitely pursue that. We're at the top of the hour. We're almost into Arizona territory. let me get to Roberta Eidman had a hand, and then we definitely want to pursue this gerrymandering as well as HR1, which is now S1, and HR4, and the whole DC statehood thing. It's really mind-boggling. Roberta Eidman, you want to jump in?
Yes, I do. You mentioned last week David Daley's excellent book on gerrymandering, but he also has a second follow-up book called Unrigged. And the interesting thing about that, how different communities fought back against partisan gerrymandering, they needed to go to the universities and get PhD mathematicians. And sometimes the magic of statistics was so subtle that one street or one intersection away from where they first did their drawing had an amazing statistical effect on predicting how the houses, the state house would be held. And it's not the kind of thing regular people can do that, you know, you have to be in abstract PhD mathematicians, and they needed to present it to courts. And it was a big deal to break it down to regular things. So to be able to just say, gee, you know, respect local communities, nonpartisan, a whole bunch of the things that the Republicans in different states did in his book, I'm summarizing his work, looked like they met all the rules. And it wasn't until they got smart, thinky, data-driven people in to 100% prove that it was not what it seemed. And they ended up following the track with showing court after court the statistics that they ended up with it. So it's easy to be gamed applying common sense to what looks like a good faith map, because the subtlety is too arcane for people like me. But
right. Of course, they do things like divide up college campuses. I mean, it's amazing. The joke is that at North Carolina A&M, the A is on one side and the M is on the other. But they, you know, that's they're able to do that. Okay, I think, thank you for that comment, Roberta, much appreciated. I think we can move on now. We have promised John Brakey and Ray Lutz, who are in the belly of the beast there. John has become a major media star, and I just want to say that we've got the time now for the next 40 minutes to do this on Arizona to get the full report, and you know, we want to hear what's going on. I want to emphasize that next week we will be back. We will have Andrea Miller with us to talk further. Charles, I hope you'll join us for more DC statehood. We are at 93 people now, and it's just amazing that this has been our 50th, and we're going to keep going. We will go record.
Harvey, let me say one more thing.
Yes, Charles, please.
Harvey and Joel have been invited to attend our weekly meetings of the DC, of Douglas Commonwealth Coalition at 9:30. I'm going to put my email address. We're going to be planning at 9:30 the demonstration. So anybody that wants to join, please send me an email, and I'll send you a Zoom invitation. I'm posting that right now.
Is that tonight? 9:30 tonight?
Yes.
Eastern time. Tonight. All right, very Eastern good. Time. Thank you, Charles. Right, thank we'll you. Be joining you tonight at 9:30. Okay, we are now in Arizona. We have Ray Lutz and John Brakey, who've been working in the belly of the beast in this amazing recount drama, which if you wrote a novel and made it up, no one would believe you. But here we are. John, I see you're out of jail, but you're still wearing your orange jumpsuit. I think you're modeling it for Donald Trump, who will be maybe in one this summer. We'll see. But if you and Ray want to tell us, give us a report, and I'm sure everybody's going to have tons of questions. So don't hold back and tell us what the latest is from Arizona, please.
Well, I think the latest is that we're still there. We're still counting. We're going very slow. Okay. We got to be out of there by the 14th. We're extremely frustrated with the county. because we've learned that we need the passwords to get into the system. The county has admitted that they don't have the passwords to get into the system. Only Dominion can get into the system, and their two employees, and they're not part of the subpoena, and they refuse to give it up, which is making it very difficult on us, because we would like to match batch to batch. And it is very, very suspicious. I was hoping that Steve Rosenfeld was going to join us, because, you know, every week I bring in somebody different. Last week it was Ray. Last week is Steve. This week, tomorrow, Benny Smith may be coming in. He's lining up his plane ticket. I bring him in because I want everybody to know that I haven't suffered Stockholm syndrome. Susan Pinshaw may not be physically there, but Susan Pinshaw is with me all the time. Hi, Susan. You know, feel free to be on this loop, because you know everything that's going on. And
well, tell and us, so, John, tell us. First of all, I think you should ask that company in Russia that hacked the pipeline if they have the password for you. Maybe that would help. But tell us exactly, if you would, what's going on. You say they got to be out of there in 4 days. Does that mean they're going to dismantle this whole operation?
Yep. For 1 week, everybody goes home. And then we have 18 schools using the facility over 5 days to graduate. And then we set it all back, or they do. You know, I have to remind myself, I am an observer. My job is to watch and to advise Ken Bennett, saying, hey, this isn't right. And I keep on his ass. And also is to push as hard as possible to legitimize this process. And the only way that it can be legitimized, in my opinion, is that, and it was announced today on iHeartRadio, that Ray Lutz, a contract is being issued. Okay, small points between Ray and them, which is none of my business. I have nothing to do with Ray's business, okay? But it is gonna happen. They need to have those images run, because the credibility, sadly, of what's going on there has been greatly damaged. So we're gonna wind up with three totals when we get done. We have the original total. We're gonna have the hand count audit if they finish. There's a possibility during the break, the feds might come in and make everything disappear. We don't know. It's they're out judge shopping. And then we'll have Ray Lutz's audit, which I think will be the most important one, because that is the one that is really counted by the machine, and it's married to the ballots. And hopefully wherever the ballots go, the Senate will pass a bill and mandate that after you're done doing an audit, let's put it this way. When we get done with Ray's audit and it's presented to the people, we basically say, we don't expect you to believe us. You can download it by precinct. We want you to get with Emily Levy of Election Scrutineers. She'll receive some funding to go ahead and help people, to teach them how to do a good audit. And then when they do that audit, they have to film it. And then they have the rights to take ballot images and match them up against the original ballot. I am there helping to unhinge people, to help the right and the left, who are both gaslighting everybody, okay, to get to the truth. And that's what this is all about. I know my elections here in this state. I canvassed it very hard. I saw the totals come in pretty much what I thought they would, according to 538. I think if they find any problems, it's not going to be in the president's race. It's not going to be in the Senate race. Believe it or not, elections are about money and allocating contracts. And that really is not done on a legislative level. They legislate and then allocate funds to counties and to cities through what they do. And then, of course, road contracts and things like that. But there is something wrong, and we can't put our thumb on it, because this thing is getting crazy with what's going on all around it. And it's
okay,
scary.
A couple of things. Lulu is on stats. She wanted to ask you a question. Also, someone in the chat said that the arena has told the auditors that they can't come back, and that they're going to have to find another location. Who is watching the ballots? Everyone, do look at the Mother Jones article by Ari Berman on the overview of where we're at with elections in this country. It's quite powerful, quite extensive. It's great to see everybody with us. We're gonna go till 7, but we're gonna turn off the recording. So if you want to use four-letter words from here on in, go right ahead. Thank you again, Mike Hirsch, Steve Caruso. And now we'll continue, but the